Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
I've been writing about the scope creep of the Competition Commission for some time in Business Day, and most recently the draft changes to the public interest guidelines relating to mergers in South Africa. In a nutshell, Trade, Industry and Competition, and now one could probably say Public Interest Minister Ibrahim Patel, wants public interest considerations to rank equal to competition factors when deals appear before the Commission. Well, to talk about what this means for private equity in particular, I'm joined now by Bafana Ntuli, a director at Worksmen's Attorneys. Bafana, welcome to the show. Firstly, what is the significance of the exit environment in the private equity investment life cycle?
Firstly, thanks, Michael, for having me on the show, and good evening to your listeners. So the exit is the last critical and sometimes the most difficult step of the entire private equity investment process, and it greatly affects the final return on investment that a purchaser, you know, would have hoped to get. So this is where the investor realizes the value or the lack thereof of its investments. And hence that after years of doing all the right things, the private equity investor would now be focused on making a great sale or purchase, depending on which side you sit.
And quite clearly from that, it's crucial for the seller to find a financially capable and bona fide buyer in the private equity exit transaction that they're doing. If you look at the performance of Southern African private equity firms, what does the latest SAVCA research reveal? Obviously, SAVCA being the industry body that represents private equity and venture capital, in its most recent survey for 2022, what does the market look like?
So, Michael, this was very interesting when I had a look at it. And what the survey says was that despite the tough environment in which business is currently trading, private equity firms remained resilient in driving revenue and employment growth, and that despite a 13% fundraising decline globally, about 19.6 billion in funds were realized in 2022, which is 21% higher than in 2021. So what this clearly shows is that despite multiple challenges in the market, private equity firms witnessed a very strong increase in both the value of exit proceeds and the number of exits.
And that shows that investors see value in investing in the asset class, which, as you've just said, has a really positive effect, more broadly speaking, on South Africa's economic landscape, be it from GDP or employment creation. Let's come now to the role of the regulatory authorities, particularly the Competition Commission. What role does the Commission play in private equity exit transactions, and how does it impact the market?
So, having looked at this from a working experience perspective, as I'm a private equity lawyer, but whenever we engage with some of the other team members from a competition perspective, is that to the extent that a transaction is reportable, meaning that it meets the standard criteria to be reported to the Commission, what you would have then is that the underlying sale agreement, in this instance, to exit an asset, would need to have a suspensive condition whereby the Commission needs to then grant consent, having considered all relevant factors before it. So it's quite an interesting play out to say that one might say not all private equity exit transactions may touch on Competition Commission issues, but to the extent that it is a qualifying transaction, then it would have to be reported and one would need to get the consent of the Commission to proceed.
Bafana, so given this, how does the Competition Commission balance the interests of private parties with its mandate to consider public interest conditions in mergers and acquisitions?
So, Michael, it's not a very easy balance from my experience and what I have observed in the market. So when one looks at the mandate of the Commission gets its mandate from the Competition Act. And the commission is mandated to consider public interest conditions during the assessment of any reportable transaction. And having looked at the guidelines and some of the approach that has been taken by the commission, is that the approach being applied by the commission is that transactions would be thoroughly interrogated. And there is a unequivocal commitment by government, to use public interest conditions via the Competition Commission as a strategic tool to advancing economic transformation. And this can be seen in some of the most famous cases that we have had recently, like the Burger King case and so forth, to say the commission is very committed to its mandate, at times, to the detriment of not granting any approvals. But one thing about them is that they're willing, it appears that they are willing to come to the table to discuss whenever there's a bit of an impasse on the part of the transacting parties.
Well, that is at least one positive, the fact that the commission is listening and you can raise concerns. But what do you see as the main changes as proposed in the draft guidelines now that we've seen? And how do they differ from the previous regulatory framework that existed prior to the amendments in 2019 and now the draft guidelines that have been implemented more recently?
So, from what I've seen, public interest has been part of South African competition law since its inception. However, there has been arguably a greater emphasis on the effect of mergers on certain public interest factors since the 2019 amendments to the Competition Act. And these amendments were to promote ownership by historically disadvantaged persons, so your HDPs and workers and companies, and to support the participation expansion of small businesses and some of these HDP-owned firms in the economy. So what you see with these guidelines is, they really speak to how they indicate the approach that the commission may adopt and the kind of information they may request whenever evaluating whether the public interest factors in Section 12A3 of the Act are applicable. And this section obviously refers to the fact that a merger must promote a greater spread of ownership by HDP persons and workers.
That said, you referenced the Burger King transaction. You then got to balance that against other parts of government policy, trying to transform the South African economy and promoting a greater spread of ownership amongst historically disadvantaged persons that may have actually taken an equity position in a business and are now looking to exit and realize a return on that investment, which is surely what the spirit of the legislation must have been. But they're now then scuppered if they are exiting to an acquirer who doesn't meet certain criteria when it comes to including historically disadvantaged persons at an equity or employment level. And this is really where the challenge is being felt practically. How might these factors impact private equity deals, specifically regarding the shareholding and empowerment credentials of historically disadvantaged persons and workers?
To be honest, Michael, that's one factor, that I was really thinking about when I was doing the analysis and, on the article. And one glaring area of concern that came to mind was that of black-owned businesses. So now the question being, how will for example, a black private equity entity unlock its full value if they can only sell to a suitor that's empowered as they are or even more than they are, and whether that suitor actually has the financial backing and muscle to conclude the deal? So it sort of leaves that up to debate to say, once you have now in a way limited because of these conditions, or to the extent that the transaction requires ComCom approval, to what extent now can you go out to market and really, when you do dispose of your asset, realize the full value that you could, given the fact that there are now all these considerations that you would need to have regard to insofar as the identity and the empowerment and shareholding of the purchaser is concerned?
Bafana, and I think you've articulated the challenge really well. As an industry, I know recently the competition authorities concluded their annual conference where the commissioner and the minister and your colleagues, competition lawyers, all gather and hopefully discuss these challenges, discuss these concerns and raise them in a constructive fashion. Does it sound like the commissioner and the minister are open to these concerns? Because these are, after all, still only draft guidelines.
Indeed, Michael. So these are simply draft guidelines. And I believe that parties and stakeholders have up until the second week, I believe, of November to comment on them. And, you know, one can only hope that the spirit and the intention behind opening up the guidelines for public comment and stakeholder engagement is to really then take into consideration some of the issues that would be raised and submitted by our clients and other stakeholders in order to ensure that as much as the Commission is committed to its mandate, but however, at the same time, it takes into account some of the commercial realities of the transacting parties entering into these exit transactions.
One last question, very quickly, Bafana. Do you think these new Competition Commission merger guidelines will stifle or encourage investment into private equity?
So now, if I had to have a view on this, Michael, is that the guidelines in their current condition, in their current state, I do think that they have a huge potential to stifle investment. Parties are going to have to think hard and long, not only on exit, but actually when they do conclude any transactions, because now with the guidelines in play, they would have to see and sort of predict how an exit 3-5 years from now will play itself out. So in their current state, I don't think they will really encourage investment. However, I am hopeful that following the consultation process, we might see something that's a bit palatable for all parties.
And Bafana, it's deeply troubling that all of this happens at a time when we're actually seeing a rise of new black-owned private equity funds. I interviewed Edward Peacey, the co-founder of Infinite Partners, not too long ago on the show. They were spun out of the Ethos mid-market fund. And really, these kinds of overly prescriptive regulations to my mind, across all kinds of lines when it comes to really what the mandate of the Competition Commission is all about, are having a potentially negative impact on the rise, the organic rise of what we're seeing when it comes to the transformation of the private equity industry and the introduction of new black-owned general partners and private equity funds. So one hopes that during this comment period that these very serious practical concerns are addressed and find their reflection in the new draft merger guidelines when they are published. Thank you very much. So was Bafana Ntuli, Director of Worksmen's Attorneys here on Classic Business.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.